Bridgebank helps breakthrough ideas actually break through and remains dedicated to providing financial solutions to those committed to leveraging innovation to make the world a better place. Bridgebank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridgebank, be bold, venture wisely.
Hi there, I'm Randa Abdel-Fattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Did you all know that we're getting a WNBA team here in the Bay Area? I'm excited. You should be, or maybe even are excited. Women's basketball has taken flight in the last few years, and as part of Youth Takeover Week here at the station, high school athletes Mahi Jarwala, Jessie Lynn, and Olivia Ma wanted to talk about the impact of women's basketball in the Bay Area and what it's going to mean for us to finally have a women's pro team playing at Chase Center. That's all coming up next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. It's the last day of Youth Takeover here on Forum. That's our annual time of the year when we get to work with Bay Area high school students to produce shows. Today, we're going to be talking about women's basketball in the Bay Area, including, of course, the big news that we're getting a WNBA expansion franchise, which is going to play at the Chase Center in San Francisco. I want to welcome the people who produced this show, our student colleagues. Up first, we've got my old pal, Mahi Jarwala, now a senior at Monta Vista High School. She first joined us 3 years ago. Welcome back, Mahi.
Thank you so much for having me, Alexis.
We're also joined by Jessie Lynn, also a senior at Woodside High School. Welcome.
So excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And we've got Olivia Ma, a junior at Basis Independent Fremont. Welcome, Olivia.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited as well.
Mahi, I mean, you love basketball. This is one thing I've known about you for a long time. You started a podcast, She Can Ball, inspired by Steph Curry. So I imagine that you're extremely excited about getting a WNBA team here in the Bay Area.
100%. As you talked about, Steph Curry has been my biggest idol growing up here in the Bay Area. And that began because he was the star of the local team. And I can't wait for other young girls to look up to girls, to women who will play on this new WNBA team and find role models in these amazing female role models that are here in the Bay.
Well, and also, I know you've been interested in kind of like the business side of basketball teams, too. And so you'll also have all these executives who are working on the women's team, too, and internship possibly. Like, it seems like for you, this is kind of a jackpot.
Yeah. No, 100%. And obviously, I'll be going to school at Stanford, so staying here in the Bay, and I think there'll be a lot of opportunities, you know, with working with them and also just being able to go and check out the new WNBA team. I cannot wait for that to start.
Totally. I also hear that you are wanting to launch some all-girls basketball clinics. Is that true?
Yeah, so we started the She Can Ball All-Girl Basketball Clinics back in 2022, inspired by Steph Curry's Free All-Girl Basketball Clinics, which, cool enough, we'll have Jeff come in later to talk about that and starting all of that. But it was one of the greatest experiences of my life, getting to see, obviously, so I started She Can Ball as a podcast, and that impact, you can't always see it, right? You can't see those young girls listening to the podcast and what they're taking from it. But when you go out into the community and you get to work with these young girls that are so passionate, that share that same fiery intensity for that sport that you once did, it was just electric. Yeah, it was just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Jesse, you also play basketball. How did you grow up? Like, what was the kind of environment you grew up playing basketball in?
Oh, my God. I fell in love with the sport maybe around fifth grade, and I loved the competition so much that I was going to AAU clubs left and right. I would go to girls' clinics, co-ed clinics, boy clinics. Sometimes I would get talked down, but, you know, that's the experience of working hard to get better and be better. And most of the time, you know, game recognized game. And so if you have those coaches that care for you and vouch for you and that team that supports you and have your back, there's nothing you feel like you can't do.
Yeah. I mean, how about the support around you? I mean, did you feel like your parents like sort of understood basketball to be something that, you know, would help you in your life? Or did they just see it as like, you know, good, healthy exercise? Like, what was their approach?
Oh, my God. My parents were thrilled about basketball. You know, I'm decently tall for Asian. So basically it was like the good genes are being used. No, I'm kidding. My parents love sports, especially my dad. He immigrated from Taiwan and, you know, he basically didn't know how to speak the language coming here in middle school. And he connected over basketball with other students. And because, you know, it's hard coming in, not knowing how to speak the language and being able to play with his peers, he like kind of got credit and like, you know, he got invited to stuff and he like he felt a part of the community, which is really nice. I'm very fortunate to have parents who are so invested in time and I have so many good memories and because of that.
Yeah. How about did you watch women's basketball?
Oh my God. Growing up, I was so busy that like I personally didn't. But, you know, the hype with this year, like I would watch, I would sit on my computer, I would like be doing homework and I would have the scores and everything, I would have all the stats. And like my parents would be watching and I could hear them through the walls and they were like screaming, yes, let's go, let's go. Like it was like the, like, you know, the Super Bowl. And it was just, it was so, so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a very special tournament this year and last year. Really amazing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Olivia, you're a figure skater. And I actually see gold medalist, sitting on your sweatshirt there. Women in figure skating have long been celebrated, right? They've sort of been at the top of the sport for a long time. So what kind of perspective do you think that gives you on, you know, what it does to have these kind of elite role models in athletics?
Yeah, I think so. I started skating when I was about 8 years old. My dad encouraged me a lot because he loved Kristi Yamaguchi and Michelle Kwan and like that league of female figure skaters. And so growing up, especially in the Bay, there are so many wonderful female figure skaters. Like you see Karen Chen, I said before, Kristi Yamaguchi, Michelle Kwan, and Alyssa Liu is another person who's very involved in women's figure skating. And yeah, it just, it inspired me a lot to want to try and, you know, do what I loved. And I feel like personally, I've never felt held back because of the fact that I was a young girl. Most of my coaches have been women. Most of my friends I've made in figure skating are girls too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it just really helps with feeling open and being able to express yourself and do what you want.
How do you see things kind of cross sports as a non-basketball player? I mean, does the rise of women's basketball make you feel something, or are you just kind of like, oh, that's nice?
It honestly, it makes me so happy because obviously in the Bay, the Warriors are like the team to root for. So since I was younger, I never really watched basketball that much. Like my dad would kind of make me watch Warriors on the TV. But I don't know, like I didn't really take that much of an interest in it until this year. Like Women's March Madness had like exploded in space with like viewership and like its hype. So I personally got a lot of videos on like my feed on social media and it honestly just got me interested. Like I paid attention to the WNBA draft too this year. It was the first time. Like I didn't even pay attention to NBA before, but like this is just, I don't know, like growing up, basketball to me was like a thing that a lot of guys in my school did. Like during lunch, recess, they always like they go out, they play, and like, you know, you don't really see a lot of girls doing that. So seeing the WNBA become and the women's basketball become this popular has been really inspiring.
You know, Mai, even from when, you know, you were in elementary school to now, you know, graduating from high school, have you seen kind of a change in the way that you think girls approach, you know, playing basketball?
100%. I think especially now we see this rise of Caitlin Clark and all this hype around women's basketball. But I do think that we are seeing more girls that are getting involved in sports. Something that Olivia brought up is a lot of boys just having that opportunity to play basketball. And that's something that I've seen all my life growing up, whether that's at school, at the park, at the gym. Boys play basketball. It's fun. It's such a fun universal sport. And it sucks that we don't have that same culture for women to just be like, hey, let's go out. Let's get some exercise. Let's have some fun at the park, at the gym, during recess. And so that's also was a big reason of the She Can Ball Clinics, where we could just have girls get excited about basketball. You don't have to go to the WNBA. You really don't. But playing sports, playing basketball, women who play sports become women who lead. We know that. The statistics show that. So getting more girls involved with the sport was just something that is really near and dear to my heart.
Yeah. We've been talking about women's basketball and the Bay Area's new WNBA team. We're going to get to more details on in just a second. We're joined by Mahi Jarawala, senior at Monta Vista High School, Olivia Ma, junior at Basis Independent Fremont, Jesse Lin, a senior at Woodside High School. They produced this show as part of KQED's Youth Takeover Week. We'd love to hear from you. You know, have you noticed this change in women's basketball? Maybe you heard our show about Tara Vanderveer and the kind of changes that she brought to the game. What's a women's sports moment that has really stood out for you? You can email us forum@kqed.org. You can go to any of our social channels over on the Discord. You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. I want to bring in another guest. Let's bring in Kim Turner, co-CEO of the nonprofit organization Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative. That's pronounced BOSSY. Also a Title IX attorney. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
How much of do you think this current explosion of women's basketball can be traced to Title IX, like kind of like a long structural change in the way that, you know, women's basketball has been supported?
Absolutely. I mean, Title IX has made such an incredible impact on our nation's sports scene. Passed in 1972, a federal civil rights law that a lot of people know or hear about but aren't quite sure what it is. And what it did in 72 with bipartisan support was make sure that we could have equity in federally funded education, which includes athletics. And so another quick fact that I think people don't always realize is that Title IX leveled the playing field for middle school, high school girls, for example, obviously colleges and universities. But we don't realize that it's actually made it possible for girls to get into the gym in middle and high school and, of course, in college. And we have seen a meteoric rise of girls and women playing sports from 300,000 in high school playing sports in 1972 to 3.3 million today.
Oh, wow. How much, you know, Jesse or Mahi, how much did you think about equity between teams, like in your school? Like, did you, at this point, do you notice a difference between the support for, you know, men's basketball in your school and the support for women's basketball in your school?
Oh, yeah. I mean, last year we had this issue where the guys would have, like, the new gym. So we have two gyms. We have the old gym and then we got the new gym. And we had that issue where most of the time they would be the guys. And then so we brought it to admin like, hey, like, and they were completely unaware of this. They were like, oh my God, that's horrible. We didn't know that. And so now we have like equal time, which is really, really nice because sometimes they don't even think about it or like people don't even notice that.
They just like defaulted to the boys get the new gym.
Yeah. I mean, we're not complaining, but like, it was really cool to like be able to be like, hey, like we want more time because we play on that court. Like, can we get in? And they were like, yeah, totally. Like, we're so sorry we didn't see this. So, you know, holding people accountable and like, you know, bringing awareness, sometimes they don't even know. Yeah. And, you know, that's just beautiful.
Yeah. Mahi?
At my school, women's sports definitely, we perform very well in women's sports, but we don't always get that viewership. And so being a women's basketball player, I bet Jesse can agree to this as well. There's not that many people that will come out to your games compared to the men's team. But there's definitely been some more hype. I know leadership does a lot of work with trying to get some more of the school involved in attending these events. So I'm hoping it can just go up from here, especially with all of this new stuff coming into the Bay.
Yeah, yeah. Jesse, I know you're also sticking around here at Cal. Are you guys going to go to the new WNBA team game?
Oh, my God. Mahi and I have been talking about it. We're talking about it. We're going together. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. I'm so excited, especially for, like, all the young kids, especially the girls, who are going to be so inspired to pick up a basketball and, like, learn leadership, how to work on a team and build relationships. I'm excited about the buzz and, like, the coverage, and I'm also excited that, like, the culture it's going to create.
Yeah. We're going to have some elite basketball players here in town. We've been talking about women's basketball, Bay Area's new WNBA team, and the high school scene as well, with Jesse Lin, a senior at Woodside High School, Mahi Jarawala, a senior at Monta Vista, and Olivia Ma, a junior at Basis Independent Fremont. They produced this show as part of KQED's Youth Takeover Week. We'll be back with more with Kim Turner and her organization, BOSSY, right after the break.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrick. We're talking about women's basketball, and in particular, this new WNBA team that we're getting here in the Bay Area. They're going to start playing next year. We're joined by Kim Turner, co-CEO of the nonprofit organization Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative. You can say that like bossy. She's also a Title IX attorney. I want to welcome in a couple of other guests as well. Marissa Njemi is the women's sports reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle. Welcome, Marissa.
Hi, thank you.
We're also joined by Jeff Adiego, who is vice president of the Warriors Basketball Academy. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Marissa, because they've got me all fired up about this WNBA team, I want to go through a couple of the details about the team. Okay, so we're going to start. When is, like, the first game going to be? Do we know that kind of detail? Like, next year, next spring, right?
Sometime next May. The season always opens in May. I don't think we'll know. I mean, we don't know the branding of the team yet.
So, yeah. We don't have a name yet, right?
Yeah, we don't. I mean, they know it. We don't know it yet. Mm. But, yeah, those details. They need to name a GM, a coach, all that. I would expect some of that to come late summer into the fall. They have about a year of runway right now, basically.
Has anybody come to the fore, perhaps like a recently retired Samford basketball coach named Tara Vanderveer, who could be the coach of the team or the GM or whatever? Or have they been totally tight-lipped about who might possibly step into this organization?
Yeah, they're not saying much. Tara's retirement is interesting timing, of course, but she is someone who's just like so dedicated to the college game and is an advisor at Stanford. But, you know, who knows? We'll
see. She could be like the Jerry West. Like, Jerry West played that role at the Warriors, you know?
Look, I didn't think she was going to, like, retire, period. So we don't know what she is thinking, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Need to ask these questions because my 8-year-old daughter was asking them of me, which is, how does the team get put together? Like, essentially, they take players from the other team.
Yeah,
other teams in the NBA, WNBA.
There will be an expansion draft. We don't know what that's going to look like exactly yet, because the last time there was an expansion team was the Atlanta Dream in 2008. So we don't have a ton of a blueprint to go off of. We don't know where they're going to pick in the draft. Previously, when Atlanta was an expansion team, they had them pick after the lottery pick. So we don't know what they're going to kind of negotiate there. But there will be an expansion draft. There will be the collegiate draft. They'll have a pick there. We don't know where exactly yet. They'll have the opportunity for free agency. And what's really interesting is after the 2025 season, almost every contract expires leading into the next CBA negotiation. So after their first season, they're going to have a real opportunity to build kind of as much as they want to. So year one, I don't know. But year two, they can really go for it if they feel like it.
What are you looking forward to in having a professional women's basketball team here, covering? Like, how do you think you're going to cover this team?
Like a beach, pretty much, from what I understand. I was brought in here kind of anticipating the WNBA, the NWSL. We have the NWSL now, Bay FC, and then WNBA coming in. I think the audience potential there is even larger, especially what we've seen with the ratings. The team is, we don't even know their name yet, and they've already sold 6,000 season ticket deposits. I expect a large audience, a large crowd at Chase Center. But I mean, the plan from the Chronicle perspective is to be around that team every single day. And I think there is an appetite for that from readers.
Yeah. Of course, you know, when we have news like this that a team is coming, there's a long backstory, right, to a team like this actually getting added into the sort of expansion world. So, Kim, a couple of years ago, you were one of a number of people who started circulating this petition to get the first WNBA expansion team since 2008, since the Dream, to come to the Bay Area. Why did you feel compelled to take that action?
Yeah, so I love basketball, played basketball growing up. I did not have a WNBA team to look up to as a kid growing up in California. And I want that for every kid, every girl, every boy, anybody, adults the same. So frankly, doing my work, getting girls in the game, getting girls into an active physical environment, I knew they needed more role models. I knew they needed a team to root for. And I knew with 12 teams, we don't have enough in this country. You know, with around 30 NBA teams, there's room to grow. And there's thousands of girls playing basketball in the Bay Area. Amazingly, Stanford, Cal, we have some absolute stars in the Bay. And we have a really heavy sports culture. We love the Warriors. We just need more wonderful heroes to root for. So I felt like there was a real need. And it's multi-level because we want people in seats. We want jerseys bought. But we also want kids playing, being active, being inspired.
Yeah. What was your reaction to that?
It was positive. You know, I had been working with the Warriors through the years on different projects in my Title IX and gender equity work. And I think they recognized that they wanted to hear from the residents of the Bay. Yes, we do want this. We will come. We'll spend the dollars and we'll root for this team. I also think, too, just the progressiveness of the Bay Area. You know, there's a lot of progressiveness in the WNBA around racial, gender equity, LGBTQ rights. You know, it was the time for us to have this addition.
Yeah. Let's bring in somebody with a women's sports moment. Casey in Pleasant Hill, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much. I love this program. Thanks for being on, and major props to the young women you have on. I look forward to the leadership that you're going to bring, and not only to sports, but to society. So thank you for that. I wanted to recall that back in the 90s, when my girls were small, we had season tickets to the Stanford women's volleyball team. To that season. They went to the national championship. One of those years, I want to say it was 94, but I'm not certain. But just watching Marnie Triefenbach, Kristen Fokel, I mean, fantastic players. And I think where we are now is naturally a result of all of that legacy. And I just love the history of what we have here in the Bay Area and how it's just getting better.
Yeah. Hey, Casey, thanks so much for that. We are taking your calls on, you know, your kind of sports role models or kind of questions about the Bay's new WNBA team. You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. Maybe your kids are just getting involved in youth sports and you're wondering how best to navigate things. You can email us forum@kqed.org. Jeff, let's talk about the Warriors Basketball Academy. Like, how does it fit into this picture of youth sports?
Sure. Well, we got started about 25 years ago with our own youth basketball programming, obviously catering to boys and girls. And, you know, if you recall back, the Warriors team 25 years ago, a very different team than what we've seen for the past decade. And so we were really...
You mean we were bad?
Yeah. What we really tried to do is just, you know, turn kids onto the game, have them fall in love with the game. And I think it's just really exciting right now to have a women's professional team come to the Bay Area and us have the ability to expose young kids to women's basketball and just how beautiful that game is. You know, it's based on skill. It's based on fundamentals and all those types of things. So developing players can really learn a lot from watching the WNBA. And I think that's what I'm most excited about.
Have you seen a change in the demand for like women coming into the Warriors Basketball Academy?
For sure. You know, it kind of starts back with Steph. He's had just an unbelievable influence on the game and turning young girls onto the game of basketball. And, you know, back in 2018, he came to us and said, hey, I want to do an all-girls basketball camp. And we kind of started off in 2018 doing something like that. Huge success. You know, it's a very different experience for girls to go to a co-ed camp versus an all-girls camp. You know, if they go to a co-ed camp, they might be, you know, one of two girls on a 10-person team. And, you know, the boys might not always be passing the ball as much as we'd want them to, but for them to be in an environment where they're surrounded by girls, surrounded by their peers, to be supported by each other, it was just really neat for us to see. You know, we had the older girls really supporting the younger girls and encouraging them and, you know, allowing them to you know, try something new and take shots and really feel like they were being supported by their peers. So it was really cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Marissa, pivoting a tiny bit away from basketball for a second, there is another very exciting Bay Area team. Bay FC is now playing, you know, they sold out their first game. They're playing, you know, down in the South Bay. What can we say about the impact that team has had on, you know, on youth sports here?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little early to say for them, but I mean, you see the merch everywhere. You see like the billboards. I can't get off a BART station without seeing the Be Legendary campaign. Like they've done such a good job of like establishing themselves in the sports culture in the Bay, which is a really hard thing to break into when you have so many teams that have the history of the Niners and the Warriors and the Giants and everything. And then to be women's soccer, this is the third crack at it for professional women's soccer in the Bay. And I wasn't here for those first two teams, but from everything I hear, it's different. And you can just see how different the NWSL is even compared to like 5 years ago. I lived in Boston and the Boston Breakers were not really taken seriously. They were they didn't get coverage until they folded all of a sudden. And now you see Bay FC getting the attention that they are. I couldn't believe the first game seeing the line that just went crazy through the parking lot to get in. And you see a lot of kids there. You see one thing I love about soccer so much is the kids that come out for the starting lineup like seeing there that they get to be alongside like Rachel Kundinanji and Ashat Achola and Tess Bodie and like these big names in women's soccer that they get to be exposed to now compared to the Earthquakes, who are not the same vibe right now. So yeah, I think we're going to continue to see that impact, but they've done such a good job of just establishing themselves as a part of the fabric of Bay Area sports in a really quick time period.
Kim, what do you think? Have you been to these games?
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely electric, to use a word used by our amazing high schoolers early in the program. Electric environment. I was lucky to bring my kids to games, and they are getting the autographs of the players. They are totally jazzed. I have a young son and daughter who are equally excited about this. And so these are role models for all kids, all people, regardless of background. And again, it's a fever dream for me, for people in the women's sports community, to have the WNBA, Bay FC, Oakland Soul come into the Bay. For many of us who really only saw women's professional sports or pros like that in the Olympic years, you know, growing up, for me, it was like every 4 years we might see a lot of women's sports on TV. Now we're going to see it all the time, all year round.
You know, I'm really curious about that because I, you know, we were recalling fondly the Brandi Chastain moment in Women's World Cup, where which seemed like it was about to launch women's soccer and maybe women's sports in general into a totally new realm. Did that happen? Or was it kind of like a rise and then maybe it wasn't sustainable because of what you're saying? There wasn't like a long-term television deal around women's soccer, et cetera.
Right. I think there's been fits and starts throughout the decades. You know, interestingly, my mom was on the U.S. women's national volleyball team in the 70s. Mm. And, you know, I think she was just inducted into the Skateboard Hall of Fame.
Really?
So I come from kind of a women's sports background. But
wait, hold on a second. Inducted into the Skateboarding Hall of Fame?
Yeah, well, so I grew up in a world, you know, with my mom, her telling me she had no sports, zero sports as a young girl. So she could skateboard and surf. Those were the things she could do in California. And so we have come a massive long way from that time when girls literally were just kept out. They could not break through that glass sideline. But the fits and starts have been about the economy, too, the business models around these sports. So women, when I was growing up, there was no pro team to even dream of being on. Now my mom had that, you know, she did not have that opportunity, but now you can. My kids are like dreaming of being on the Bay FC team or the WNBA team, but we need the investors. And that's why I love this WNBA and Bay FC ownership group, who are realizing there are dollars that people want to spend on those tickets, on those jerseys, and we want to see it trickle down into youth participation, college participation, like a community-wide effort.
Yeah. And I think let's bring in caller Helena in Fremont, who also wonders about that money trickling down to players. Helena, welcome.
Great program. I love this topic. And so, like you mentioned, that the soccer, women's soccer team and WNBA are definitely creating all the heat in these years. So my question is that how about the average player's salary comparing with their peers in men's team? Mm-hmm. I always want to know, are we getting the equality or are we far away from each other? Mm. Thank you.
Yeah. Helena, great question. Marissa, my understanding of this is that the WNBA, like the NBA, has a collective bargaining agreement with the Players Association. But just on the pure facts of it, how far away are women's salaries in WNBA from the NBA salaries?
Yeah, it's drastic, obviously, because you have NBA guys making like $30 million a year, and we all saw Caitlin Clark's salary that went pretty viral. I think we are closer to that being changed and that gap being at least narrowed a little bit with the CBA being up after the 2025 season. That's also when the WNBA media rights deal is up, and that's where they're going to see a significant boost in their rights deal because of the ratings we've seen in the college game. I would expect the ratings to go up in the WNBA a lot this year. We're already seeing three teams have sold out season tickets. Every game Caitlin Clark plays is going to be sold out. The ratings are going to be very high, so that number is going to go up a lot. And by the time the CBA negotiations come around, the WNBA Players Association is very cognizant of their value, and they have been for a long time. They've been pushing for it. And now they finally kind of have that public ammo, because we are all seeing it. There's outrage about, oh, Caitlin Clark's only making $76,000 or whatever.
$76,535, yeah.
Yeah, so like there's going to be that public backlash now. We're going to see a lot of changes across women's pro sports between charter flights and things like that as well, just sort of making more equitable ground. I'm not sure we're going to have a world where anyone's getting like Steph Curry salary, but I do think that salary cap for the WNBA is going to go up dramatically, and that's going to allow more space because there are teams right now that are willing to pay more. You look at Vegas, you look at the Liberty, they do have the finances, I'm sure. WNBA Golden State as well is going to have that willingness because they do have the capital. But then you have other teams that don't as much, but having a salary cap that is widened will give an opportunity for players to make more money. And I think we're about a year, 2 years away from that CBA allowing that opportunity.
Yeah. Also worth noting, $28 million deal with Nike over 8 years for Caitlin Clark. So not most of her salary, actually like NBA players really, is coming from outside sources.
She's not struggling.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, I wanted to ask you, you know, listener writes, you know, as parents of a three-year-old girl, my wife and I are currently navigating the tides of enrolling our daughter into organized sports and clubs, and sometimes it's disheartening to see how poorly organized these clubs are. As a former student athlete, I see in myself the joy my parents once felt when watching my brothers and I on the gridiron, and I love seeing my wife's eyes shine as she was never an athlete herself due to disability and her parents not thinking that sports were important. For parents who are, you know, navigating this terrain, it does seem, at least from my perspective, my kids are not huge on sports, but seeing all around me, it seems like things have gotten so serious at the youth level right now that it's almost like entry points feel more difficult, you know, and kids, you know, if you have a kid who's just starting to play basketball at 8 years old, there's kids who've been playing since they were two and they're quite good. So what's your sort of recommendation for parents in this?
Yeah, there's certainly some undesirable things associated with youth sports these days. And, you know, I think something that's very important is keeping your kid involved in multiple sports as long as you can. You know, I think, you know, we see kids at age eight and they have, you know, their own basketball trainer and they're going 5 days a week. And what's going to happen is you're going to see burnout. You know, they may love the sport when they get started, but, you know, so much pressure is being put on them at a young age and they're almost being put through a professional schedule as an elementary school kid or a middle school kid. By the time they hit high school, who knows what's going to happen in terms of their love for the game. So, you know, I think they learn a lot from playing different sports. You know, you might be a star in basketball, but maybe on the baseball team, you're one of the role players and you kind of learn how to support your teammates from that role and for that perspective. And then, you know, when you go back to basketball, you can kind of take those learnings with you and it helps you, you know, just your overall performance. And so, you know, I've encouraged the parents I talk to, even though we're involved with basketball, you know, to keep their kids in all the other sports as well, because at the end of the day, it's really going to help them develop as individuals and as athletes.
Yeah, I love the idea that, you know, being a bench warmer in one sport helps you have some empathy, even if you're a star in another one. You know, I hadn't thought about that. One of our listeners, Rachel, writes, I played basketball growing up in St. Louis and in college during the early 90s. My only hope to keep playing at that time was overseas. We had almost no fans at our games other than parents and a few friends. This year, my 16-year-old son and his friend watched the Final Four for both men and women with me. It was moving and mind-blowing. When I was a little girl, my dad would find a cable channel that was airing the NCAA Women's Final Four, but that was the only women's basketball on TV. What a change over these 30 years. It's a beautiful thing to see that progress can happen, though it may be slow and require patience. You talked about the television deal for women's sports earlier, Marissa. How much more women's basketball is going to just be on like ESPN or like the, you know, ABC?
Yeah, I mean, like now's an inflection point, and I think part of it is because men's sports are so saturated at this point, like the kind of the growth opportunity is going to come on the women's side. Like, how many more spring football leagues are we going to have to invest money into when you have like actual tangible numbers? And to your point too, like earlier you mentioned, like we've had kind of these starts and stops for a women's sports camp, and like you go back to the 80s, Cheryl Miller, there were 12 million people watching it back then in the women's Final Four. So, like, there have been these moments. South Carolina coach John Staley has talked a lot about how, like, it's almost been intentional the way the women's game has been held back. Like, there have been these there has been evidence of the sport growing, and I think we're at a point now where I don't think there's no putting it back at this point because of social media and everything.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about that after the break. We've been talking about women's basketball and the Bay Area's new WNBA team. We're joined this morning by Marissa Njemi, a women's sports reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle, Jeff Adiego, who is vice president of the Warriors Basketball Academy, and Kim Turner, co-CEO of the nonprofit organization Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative. This show has been produced by our local high school students, and we'll be back with more right after the break.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about the growth in women's basketball. Bay Area's new WNBA team. This is a youth takeover show. That means it was produced by three of our local high school student colleagues as part of KQED's youth takeover. We've been, this show is produced by Olivia Ma, a junior at Basis Independent Fremont, Jesse Lynn, a senior at Woodside High School, and Mahi Jarwala, a senior at Monta Vista High School. And you heard them all earlier in this show. Right now, we're joined by Jeff Adiego, vice president of the Warriors Basketball Academy, Marissa Njemi, women's sports reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle, and Kim Turner, co-CEO of the nonprofit organization Bay Area Sports Initiative. That's bossy. We would love to hear from you as well. Did you feel encouraged in sports growing up? Have you seen things be different for your children? Has it been difficult to get your kids interested in sports? Email us forum@kqed.org. You can go on any of our social channels, or you can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. We've also, I enjoyed that great moments in, you know, women's sports call that we had too, if you want to share one of those as well. Kim Turner, I'm really curious, you know, because you are like a practicing Title IX lawyer. You come across different cases. I think because there has been such growth in girls' sports, because women's sports seem like they're reaching this new level, it might seem like, oh, well, the problems have been handled. But obviously, as a lawyer, you encounter a lot of the situations where the problems most definitely have not been handled. So what are the kind of things that you encounter at the high school level?
Yeah, thanks. So I have been working for 12 years with high school, middle school girls around California and the nation on Title IX issues. And I think we've made a ton of progress, but we have much more work to do. And around the state, the Bay, you see high schools, you know, high income, low income, diverse, less diverse, where girls are getting a second class treatment in basketball and soccer and softball, volleyball, et cetera. So things like less gym time, worse gym times, coaches that don't know their sport as well as the boys' teams, things like transportation, you know, charter bus for boys, and girls are driving themselves to practice. So one of the reasons I love this area of law is because there's so much room for massive change over a short amount of time. So once, as the high schoolers mentioned earlier, they realized, wow, we didn't know the girls had really old uniforms or didn't have a charter bus and the boys did. We can really show girls at the school they matter just as much and that they take into the workplace, they take into the family, they take into employment later, that they are equal. But we have work to do with Title IX rights and responsibilities so that schools know their responsibilities to assess the whole program and then to fix it. And then we also want to make sure that the girls, the parents, the allies, the boys, the men, everybody's raising their hand saying, hey, we're not quite level yet. We have more work to do. We want to make sure this educational opportunity, because sports in school is educational, is equitable. And finally, I'll say people realize we wouldn't give old textbooks to girls and new textbooks to boys. Why would we do that with uniforms or with equipment and supplies in school sports?
What's the response from schools? Do they really just say we didn't know? That seems ridiculous.
Well, yeah, you know, I just want to say schools are working really hard. I know at Bossy we're working with schools around the Bay and bringing free sports to kids in under-resourced areas, girls, kids with disabilities. So we appreciate our schools, our athletic directors, et cetera. But I do think there is just a not looking deep enough sometimes or running too fast and wait, why are the girls in the old gym and the boys are in the new gym? And then we have sociological work to do in our society around equity in sports, in society. We know still we have inequity in gender, obviously in race and socioeconomics. So we just need to dig in and work harder. And thankfully, there are fact sheets and things on Title IX. So you can do that analysis in your high school, in your college, in your middle school, and you can level the playing field. And it feels so good for a daughter and son in a family to say, I have the same quality locker room. I matter just as much.
They don't come back and say, well, you know, 2,000 people go to the high school football game and only, you know, 200 people go to the high school women's volleyball game. Do they say that? I mean,
you know, interestingly, I think Title IX is very reasonable as a law. So it doesn't require that 2,000 spectators go to every game, though that's great if they do. It actually is about opportunity. So it's what I hear. In fact, just this week at Bossy, we were working with high schoolers in San Jose who were saying, hey, we need to make sure our games are advertised on the PA system as much as the boys. Or we get, you know, yearbook coverage or social media coverage in the school's website or Instagram account. So just making sure that they have access to the channels of communication, which relates to our WNBA team. Do we know when the games are on? Can we make sure to watch just as readily as we would the NBA? So it's really multi-level that youth, college, and pro sports are equally accessible to the fans because the fans want to watch and cheer at all levels, but they don't always know how.
Marissa, it's interesting. I was listening to a podcast, Run Out of Manny's, the restaurant and event space here. And they were talking about the new WNBA team. And one of the things that the guests that they had attributed a lot of the rise of women's basketball in particular to was that social media makes it just so much easier to stumble into the play. Like you can just see a supercut of Caitlin Clark, you know, shooting from 35 feet over and over. And that has generated a different kind of fandom from when you had linear television in which there were only a certain number of slots. Like, have you covered any of that kind of the intersection of social media and the kind of business of television and college basketball?
Yeah, I think that's a really important element because for so long, women's sports haven't been on linear TV or haven't been as accessible. So a lot of women's sports fandom lives online. There were times I remember where like NWSL games or whatever are streamed on like YouTube and they have like the comment sections. And that's how community is kind of built because there are just so much, there's so fewer opportunities to build community through professional women's sports in person because there are fewer teams. There aren't as many like gatherings. Bay FC's done a great job of the watch parties to have something like that, but those historically haven't really existed. So that audience and community has lived online. And that's, it's been pretty big. Like the audience isn't coming out of nowhere. People aren't just like being like, oh, women's basketball, turns out it's great. I'm going to watch on TV and 18 million people just decided that yesterday. A lot of that has been building and now networks and media corporations and everyone's kind of realizing, oh, we can make money off this. We can do a capitalism with women's sports as well as men's sports. But that, it always has existed. It has been building. It's been gradual, but it hasn't been, it's not like just overnight everyone's like, oh, Caitlin Clark exists. I'm going to watch this now. There's a part of that, but that's come from the marketing, like you mentioned as well, Kim, just like a lot of inaccessibility has been, like, I mean, like the Stanford Gender Equity Report, I just did a story on that that's coming out soon. And a lot of what the athletes were asking for is like, can you tweet about us just as much and things like that? And now that that exists, we're seeing the audience that always has existed and has always had the potential to grow.
Yeah. Another listener writes, you know, here in the East Bay, my daughter grew up watching the Warriors play and playing in rec leagues during middle school. I was thrilled for her to make her JV team when she started high school. The first thing I noticed at her first game, a huge banner of all the male team members adorning the gym walls. Zero signs of any female players. Second thing I noticed was that nobody came compared to boys' basketball games that were packed. My solution was to start taking her to Cal and St. Mary's women's games. It was so inspirational for her to see the rabid fan base, sold out crowds, incredible talent on the court. We're so happy about the WNBA coming to town. Really enrich female sports in the area, and I predict a positive trickle-down effect. Has Bossy looked at this or done research or aware of research about the relationship between women's professional sports and the trickle-down effect?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're in touch with the researchers on this, but we're also living it day to day because when serving thousands of kids since we started in 2005 and girls in under-resourced areas, kids with disabilities, we take our girls to college games in the South Bay and beyond, and we literally show them this is what it's like to be a college player. This is not just from the sport perspective, but you can be a student here. We're all about leadership and career as well as sport because there's a continuum there. 90% of C-suite, corporate suite women played sports growing up.
Yeah, I heard that stat and I was surprised by it.
And actually, kids who played high school sports get a 7% wage bump. They're correlated to make higher wages as adults, boys and girls. So we want to make sure girls and kids have that access. So we do take them to games. I will say there's still research to be done about how a major franchise, a new club like the WNBA, impacts youth sports participation. But my passion is move the needle. Make sure that, you know, it's a big business, millions and billions of dollars. When they come to town, that they're making sure that we're opening up the gyms for the kids, for the girls, so that they can get in and play pickup, be on a team, have a coach. There is a real issue there where we might have a big franchise doing very well, selling lots of tickets, but you still have girls. I know of girls saying, I want to play basketball, but I don't have a team. I don't have a coach, or I don't have the money to play because it has gotten so expensive. So we need to work on that.
Yeah. You know, there's a story here one of our listeners wrote in to say, I kind of love this. Nancy writes, cannot overstate the effect of Title IX and the general progressive culture growing up in the Bay Area in the 70s on my life. When I was in seventh grade, we were told to create an intramural team. Having older brothers, I knew a little basketball, so I was made the captain. What a blast. This was one of the first of many opportunities given to me to do, quote, untraditional things for girls and women. I just turned 65. Last Christmas, I walked to the local park with my husband and sons. Who do you think had the best shooting stats? Yep, it was me. Another listener writes in to say, and Jeff, this one's coming to you. Last week, a tweet of LSU star Flo J. Johnson meeting a fan went viral on social media. It was a young boy who was super emotional to meet her at an autograph signing. So beautiful to see that example of how young boys are looking up to these women's sports figures too, not just girls. The way Mahi said Steph Curry inspired her, there will be women who can and will influence a generation of little boys. I'm fascinated by this in the context of the way that the Warriors Academy works, right? Because part of it is you bring in these stars. So is the plan to bring in stars from the, you know, WNBA team as well as, you know, the Warriors?
For sure. That'll definitely be the plan. And we've actually been doing it for a number of years now. We've brought in, you know, WNBA legends like Ruthie Bolton and Jennifer Azey and Candace Parker to come and speak at our camps. And, you know, just to introduce them to, you know, the stars of the women's game and get them exposed to that. I think, you know, a great moment this past season was at All-Star Weekend when Steph and Sabrina had the three-point shootout. You know, of all the events that happened over All-Star Weekend, that was by far the most entertaining. You know, I have a daughter.
It's the only one I watched.
Yeah. I have a daughter who plays high school basketball, and it was must-see TV for her and her teammates. And I think, you know, everybody that was watching it enjoyed it so much. So I think, you know, that's going to be a big key for us is, you know, introducing our new players to our young fan base and introducing both boys and girls to the women's game and keeping them excited about it.
Yeah. Another listener writes in to say, this show today and these young women guests are such an inspiration. We live in Menlo Park, have two girls who are 10 and 8. They're both very into basketball. One is also on the All-Star team in Palo Alto. We have a sign in our yard that says, Proud Girls Softball Family Lives Here. An older woman walked by the other day and said, quote, I walk by your house every day and this sign makes my day every time. And she said it always reminds her of how important Title IX was and how she got to watch the first women's track team cross the finish line in her college. Kim, what's the sort of next steps in Title IX? You know, is it just kind of small bore, pick off these individual kind of situations, ensure, you know, equity between men's and women's teams? Or is there a bigger thing that needs to happen?
There's a sea change ahead. We've made a lot of progress, and I love that softball sign, absolutely. But we still have a million-girl gap in the country in terms of girls having about 3.3 million high school opportunities and boys having about 4.5 million. So we've made a lot of progress, but there's still girls literally putting their hand up saying, I want a team, I want a JV basketball team or a third level. Boys might have three levels of basketball, girls just one. And they want to play, but they need gym time, they need coaches, they need resources. So we can move that needle. But also, I liken it to something like seatbelt safety. where, you know, girls are getting second class treatment in a lot of schools and colleges still. And we think, oh, you know, that's normal and we don't question it. But like, we wear seatbelts and we, of course, do. And that's been a big change in our lifetime. Like, mm-hmm. we have to do it. I think in a few years, we're going to say girls will have to have equal gym time. We'll have to have equal uniforms. We'll have to have, all, and again, college pros, you know, and mm-hmm. to the mm-hmm. little kids in the park and rec, making sure that they have equity will be key. And we have to keep driving mm-hmm. toward it, talking to each other, and then allyship, boys and men, because 25% of youth coaches are women, 75% are men. Hmm. Most athletic directors are men. So we need the allyship from boys and men, because often they're the gatekeepers who do have the keys to the gym, who can let those girls in and make sure that they're rooting for them just as much.
Hmm. Let's get to Jim in San Francisco. Welcome, Jim.
Hi there. I'm a pediatrician at UCSF, a parent, a former coach, and an avid sports person. And our literature, including the pediatric orthopedic literature, says that it's most important for kids to play a diversity of sports. This whole thing about specializing early does not actually lead to better athletes. And the whole child sports thing embedded in travel teams and stuff is expensive. And it's better for kids to stay in their local school system and other things, not specialized too early. I wonder if your guests would respond. I'll listen off air.
Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot, Jim, for that point. Thanks for your work with the kids at UCSF. You know, I'll just tack on this listener comment, and this is going to come to you, Kim. You know, I lament that girls these days don't have the opportunities, given that hyper-competitive sports, often with a high price tag, start so young. I wish we could keep opportunities open for all kids and young adults to compete at all levels. In the programming that you do, how do you try and keep that in mind or incorporate that into your thinking?
Yeah. At BOSTI, we place coaches around Bay Area schools to give girls and kids with disabilities free sports programming, which is something you do not hear much these days. As a parent myself of club sport playing kids, it's very expensive. So we're removing critical barriers, cost and transportation, because we're doing the sport at the site. To that point, like playing school sports, playing a litany of sports is key. And though we're founded by great soccer luminaries, BOSTI is sport agnostic. So we're introducing girls to basketball, volleyball, soccer, football. Flag football is growing enormously in California, for example, in the country. And, you know, let's just remember, this is about health and development and wellness. It's not necessarily about being a pro player or an Olympian. It's about having a sensibility of your physical skills, you know, jogging, you know, kinesthetics. Like, we want kids to be healthy. We want them to have a lifetime of health and wellness. The mental health benefits of sports are phenomenal. We know that. So we're just trying to plant those seeds of excitement around sport and physical activity with our kids and radiate that out, not mm-hmm. just with them, with their peers, and then do it for a lifetime so that they're active for their whole lives.
Yeah. Marissa, are there other things that you're looking out for kind of in your ambit as a, you know, women's sports reporter here in the Bay Area that we haven't talked about, things that are kind of coming up in the mix for you?
Oh, there's so much happening. Yeah. It's like I never get a break. but yeah, I mean, the WNBA coming is obviously kind of the biggest story around that. And also, like, how Bay FC succeeds. Like, they sold out their first game. The second game was close to a sellout. What does that look like long term? Like, mm-hmm. what's the success of that team going to be? Stanford and Cal heading to the ACC. What kind of impact is that going to have
so
on them?
Weird.
It is so weird. And it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle chartering. And a lot of women's sports are going to be impacted more heavily between, like, softball, volleyball, women's mm-hmm. soccer, things like that. How the athletes are coping, how that's going to impact recruiting and things like that. That's going to be huge. In high school sports, there's Title IX violations kind of everywhere. And those are going to continue to be stories. Flag football growing as well. That's been huge since it became an official CIF sport in California last year. I said it earlier, I think women's sports kind of is the next growth point of stories in sports and marketing and all of that. And I think the Bay Area is going to kind of continue to be an epicenter of that.
We've been talking about women's basketball and the Bay Area's new WNBA team with Marissa and Jemmy, women's sports reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle. Always busy. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Also been joined by Jeff Adiego, Vice President of the Warriors Basketball Academy. Thank you, Jeff.
Appreciate it.
Also been joined by Kim Turner, co-CEO of the nonprofit organization Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative. Thanks so much, Kim.
Thank you. Fabulous.
You may recognize this song from the glory days of the Warriors. You know, earlier we were joined by three local high school students who also produced this show as part of KQED's Youth Takeover. That was, of course, Olivia Ma, junior at Basis Independent Fremont, Jesse Lynn, a senior at Woodside, Mahi Jarwal, senior at Monta Vista High School. The 9 o'clock hour form is produced by Grace Wan, Blanca Torres, Dan Zoll, Tessa Paoli. Our interns are Emiko Oda and Annie Burton. Marlena Jackson-Rotondo and Jennifer Ng are our engagement producers. Francesca Fenzi is our digital community producer. Judy Campbell's lead producer. Engineers are Danny Bringer, Brandon Willard, Christopher Beal here this morning, and Catherine Monahan. Our Vice President of News is Ethan Tobin-Linty, and our Chief Content Officer is Holly Kernan. The Youth Takeover shows this week have been produced expertly, and I'm so grateful to them. Jericho Reininger, Francesca Fenzi, thank you so much. They worked in collaboration with members of KQED's Youth Advisory Board. You heard their names earlier. Mahi Jarwala, Jesse Lynn, Olivia Ma. Also, earlier this week, Ryan Heshmati, Kate Quach, Khadija Khan, and Nico Fisher. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead.
It's going down for real. Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.